There was a manual. Well, more than a manual. The mother of all manuals. The grandmother of all manuals. A manual that will never see a greater manual exist in the expanse of time. And if I'm being honest, it's a manual that represents a suite of manuals going in every direction, covering every aspect of its subject. And for one brief few weeks, I held one piece of this massive manual in my hands with the intention of turning it into a digital document. But, well, the story of how that manual even fell into my hands and then fell out again is worth going into, even if I'm not sure there's really any lessons to be learned. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Jeff Atwood, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Some people might already know what manual I'm talking about, but if you don't, I'm talking about the Bell System Manual, the manual of manuals created to run an entire telephone company. The documentation created by a nearly infinite army of engineers, chroniclers, secretaries, management, to describe every last aspect of running the American telephone system. And when I mean everything was covered in this manual, I do mean everything. Besides telling you how each and every piece of telephone switching equipment worked, it would tell you exactly how many strokes of a broom you would use to do a proper cleaning of a central office floor. There were entries about what sort of food to order for various types of events, including ingredient lists and even recipes. Everything, and I do mean everything, about the operation of the Bell system sits in these stacks and stacks and stacks of binders. Obviously, over its main lifetime, it had versioning. People would swap in and swap out pieces of this manual, reflecting updates in procedure or availability of equipment, part numbers, and so on. It was, in fact, a living document, a kind of proto-Wikipedia for people who think that way, and it was exemplary in leaving absolutely nothing to chance. I probably would have had this manual somewhere in the back of my mind as the holy grail to a phone freak, a teenage one who wanted to know more about this telephone system, but just fundamentally lacked the technical expertise that others had. I simply knew how to press numbers, which places to go to, and in some ways socialize with friends who were much more connected, much more smart than me in the realm of telephones. And one day, an opportunity dropped into my lap. It turned out, and please forgive me for not being too detailed about this, that friends of friends had gotten inside of a central office, found a pile of the Bell System manuals, and borrowed them for a while. In the expanse of time, I'll call it borrowed. And they decided that this information, this hot manual information, needed to go online. And the whole reason this even became within my realm of awareness was because they were seeking transcribers, people willing to take these three-ring binders into their homes, type in the contents of them, and then return them, with perhaps the goal of having some of the more juicy, interesting, evocative manuals become available. And that was how I found myself in Chappaqua, New York, on the second floor of the house I shared with my father, in my special little computer room, typing in the contents of one manual. Now, this manual was special. It was a Bell Systems strike manual. It was a set of agreed-upon procedures for central office managers to bring into play in an emergency, should there be a strike of Bell System employees. How you were supposed to do the work you did, work with minimal people, be able to keep your central office clean and running, and then, even more interestingly, what you needed to do to protect the central office against possible physical and unknown attacks. The idea of turning a central office from a functioning piece of switching equipment housed inside of a brick building into a fortress. This was really a manual. There was a manual for that. And what I had to do was start at page one and begin typing. Now, I loved typing at that time. I loved working with my IBM 5150, working on that beautiful metal keyboard, transcribing what was in front of me. There's a certain freedom somebody has when they're transcribing. The feeling of not having to worry about what the next word is going to be, just focusing on getting the words in front of you as accurate as possible. And every day after school and on the weekends, I would move a number of pages forward, 12 or 24 of them, transcribing every word I could find. And at age 16, it was fascinating to see that sort of dry, unemotional language being applied to a fundamentally emotional situation, a labor action, presented as if it was a storm or a piece of nature flying through the doors that you needed to have protection for, where to get a bed, what sort of supplies you could have since you might have to lock yourself into the building for days on end, what you should accept and not accept in terms of packages, what you should communicate when you're hunkered down. You know, at 16, you buy into a lot of survivalist and prepper documentation. There's something about the humor of it, the feeling of doom, but also the dream you're going to get by it, on your wits, on your skills, on your strength. This is also why I would find myself subscribing to things like Lumpanix or Paladin Press, the writings of Kurt Saxon or George Heyduke, people who would write these very funny, off-kilter approaches to being the smartest, most ready person in the room. Looking back now, of course, it's a lot of dreams and hokery and being humorous, but at the time it knocked me out of feeling like I was just a powerless teenager with everything spoken for and not having a voice. This is fundamentally, I think, why I've always loved text files, why I've always enjoyed these little missives from dreams beyond. After all, many of these text files are transcriptions of radical documentation from the 60s and 70s, remixed for a young and digital subculture. So day after day went by, and I would write in all of these absolutely interesting contingencies for a Bell Central office under strike. It was, in many ways, kind of an after-school activity. Go and attend classes and see my friends and hang out, take a bus home, and then continue to transcribe the deep and well-thought-out procedures in the case of a contingency I would have never thought of. This went on, like I said, for a couple weeks. And then those friends of friends got the word out to our small army of transcribers. Something had gone wrong. I guess there was a camera, maybe there was some other tip-off about what was going on, but they knew. They knew what had happened, and they knew that the materials were out there and in the hands of, well, let's just say children. And there was a deal struck. People knew who people were, and the people who wanted the material back made it known. If this shows up in our front door, no questions will ever be asked, nobody will be tracked down, and no other forces will be involved. So... I'd only gotten about halfway through the manual when the word came that somebody was going to be coming to my house and picking it up. I was really sad because I felt like a project was not going to be completed. The provenance of the object, of the manual, wasn't as important to me then. It was just that this gift, this knowledge that I wouldn't otherwise have, was going to slip away. But they came, they took the manual, and away it went. And the subject wasn't brought up again. I guess until now. As for where it is, that text file, my greatest text file I was ever proud of, well, it was sitting on a machine that, when I went to college, my father disposed of. Now, he lost a lot of things when he disposed of that computer, and in the years hence, he's been so, so apologetic about the irony that the little boy who's gone on to save so many things for others had his own things thrown away. But that's the way of life. And in fact, I'm sure out there is a copy of this manual sitting in some dusty box in the back of a museum or archive. Maybe now, with the years and years that I've built up in reputation and awareness of what I'm into, in the dearth of a Bell phone system now 40 years gone, maybe it's time to think about transcribing it again. We have so much technology at our hands. I think it could happen in moments. But until that day comes, until I'm reunited with my little love affair of a text file, of typing, transcription, and reading words far wiser than beyond my own years, I couldn't have asked for a greater gift. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Dileep Reddy, Craig Talbert, Sean Kelly, Trixie the Cat, Martin, Sembiance, Tiggs, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. I'm not going to give too many more details about those friends of friends. They were so taken by the idea, the wonderment of having forbidden knowledge, they made a very bad mistake. A mistake that could have cost them a lot more than what it did. Embarrassment, conversations with parents, and of course a very, very humble returning. Believe it or not, in a few cases, I've been the person who's had to have that conversation with parents or with the perpetrators. I try to remember that little favor from years and years ago and be the better person, giving them a chance to make things right. I hope that many other people, having made a pretty big mistake, are given an opportunity to quietly make things right.